We are continuing to follow the very tragic story of Jacqueline Torres Garcia, also known as Mimi, the little girl whose body was found earlier this year in New Britain. It was determined by investigators, though, that she was killed last fall, and that was in Farmington. She then was moved by, allegedly, her mom and brought to New Britain where her body was discovered. Now her mother, the boyfriend of the mother, and her aunt are all facing murder charges. But this is actually a part of the story that I was really fascinated by because I had gotten, I had received a letter, a copy of a letter that had gone to the Attorney General. And it was actually involving Jacqueline's father. Now, I haven't really heard an awful lot about Jacqueline's father. It seemed like he was kind of out of the picture. I know originally there were reports that he had tried to be in contact with her, but he was kind of blocked from that. He wasn't told her address, a lot of stuff. But really, we didn't hear much about this person. So it was pretty shocking to me to hear that there was a letter sent out specifically by state senators of the Republican Party with regards to the estate of Jacqueline suing the State Department of Children and Families for $100 million in damages, and specifically calls out a state court to remove Victor Torres as next of kin to the child they say he abandoned. Like, that was the wording they used. And so one of the signatures on that letter was Senator Jason Perillo, who is one of the ranking senators for the Committee on Children. And Senator Perillo, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. I know this was sent earlier this month, but talk to us about what led up to this letter going to the Attorney General.
Well, look, at the end of the day, you want to make sure that everybody is held accountable. And in some cases, that includes family members. So, you know, one of the things that the Attorney General of the state of Connecticut does is protect the state. And that is exactly what we want to make sure the Attorney General does.
Okay. So has anybody heard anything or much more than what I just talked about regarding Jacqueline's biological father?
No. And Melissa, in fact, you sort of mentioned it. It hasn't really been discussed all that much. You know, I've seen some interviews on you know, news networks that have discussed it. You know that the father is actively or at least appears to intend to sue the state of Connecticut. So, you know, all of this evolves. And, you know, in a lot of my conversations with the Department of Children and Families, you know, again, my focus, and we've talked about this quite a bit, you know, my focus is just making sure that, you know, this doesn't happen again, that we learn from this. And that's really where our focus needs to be. But at the same time, you know, the Attorney General needs to do his job as well.
So I know this letter was dated on December 10th. Have you heard anything from Attorney General Tong?
I have not. Okay. You know, many of us signed it, as you know, and you know, haven't heard back. Typically, the Attorney General's office does respond. I have not seen that response yet. But that doesn't mean, honestly, that he won't.
Okay. So it's interesting because I want to make sure people understand why the biological father is mentioned in this. This is a little girl. And so I would imagine she was under the as far as we understand, she was under the custody of her biological mother, who is one of the three suspects in this murder case. So because her mom, Carla Garcia, is facing charges, she is in police custody right now. Is that why Victor Torres would be considered the next of kin, even if I don't know if he has any custody rights to her? We don't know that at this point, or do you?
No, and see, you're asking the exact right question, because the waters are kind of muddy at this point. You know, the biological father, you know, actually at one point reached out to DCF to, you know, ask for them to investigate further. And, you know, that's part and parcel, I believe, of, you know, why there may be an intent to sue the state of Connecticut. As you remember, you know, part of the DCF's response to that request from the biological dad was to remember that interview they conducted remotely.
Yes. Where it wasn't even her. You know, it was a different kid.
Yes. I mean, talk about terrible. You know, and for listeners who may not remember, the Department of Children and Families interviewed mom and interviewed Mimi, and or at least they thought so, and they did it, you know, remotely over computer, and there was actually a different girl that mom was pretending was Mimi. So,
and that's according to DCF, heard, by the way. That's not even alleged. That's the DCF did confirm that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. DCF did confirm that. And you know, folks I talked to have not heard of that happening in the past. I've even seen interviews with attorneys who've dealt with DCF who said they've never heard of that happening. I will say this. You know, we have a new commissioner in charge of DCF. I spoke with her and her team at length. You know, they are not taking this lightly. Of course, they, in fairness, were not involved in this case. But they want to make sure that, you know, the right things come out of it in the end. They want to make sure that DCF staff has the tools and the knowledge they need to prevent things like this in the future. They want to make sure that there are systems in place and to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. And I've always said this. This is a systemic problem. There are processes that ought to be able to put in place at DCF to keep kids safe in the future. And if we fail to learn from this and implement those policies and processes, then we've failed as a state.
So you've been in touch. We're talking to State Senator Jason Perillo, who, again, is the ranking senator on the Children and Committees. You've spoken to Susan Hamilton, who, again, is on an interim basis, but she actually was the former commissioner years ago, is now in this role again. Since Jody Hill Lilly decided to leave kind of abruptly for another job earlier this summer. And you've spoken to Susan Hamilton?
I have at length. And I was very pleased with the way she's approaching this. You know, she's really taken a leadership stance. So I really, you know, look, the jury's out. We don't know what's going to happen, and we don't know what the results of any changes within DCF are going to be. But right now, at this moment, I'm very confident that leadership at DCF is taking this seriously. And of course, look, as a legislature, you know, we're going to be on top of that. We don't go away just because there's new leadership in the department. In fact, if anything, we want to work even more closely with Commissioner Hamilton. And that's what I intend to do. I want to make sure the kids are safe. And it seems like the commissioner wants to do the same thing. So, you know, we want to be partners in that.
We are chatting with State Senator Jason Perillo, and he's the ranking senator on the Children on Committee, or the Committee on Children, rather, here in the state of Connecticut. And we're talking about the horrific case for Jacqueline Torres Garcia. And earlier this month, there was a letter that was sent to the Attorney General. We haven't heard back just yet, but we most likely will. In regards to the estate of Jacqueline Torres Garcia, you know, something you had just said before, Senator Perillo, I wanted to kind of dive into that a little bit more. You said as a legislature, we're going to be on top of that. So like we're going to be on top of continuing to figure out what is DCF struggling with systematically. And how do we better support them? How do we improve on some of the systems that are in place that are clearly not working? I'm curious, you know, so one of the examples you brought up in this case in particular was a video call with a kid that was not the actual child in this case. Do we think, because it only happened earlier this year, is that because of DCF shortages? Is that because we've allowed a lot of agencies at the state level to work remotely? I mean, is that something that you spoke with Commissioner Hamilton about?
Well, and actually, it's interesting because the remote work is something that did come up and that has come up many times. You know, many agencies have their staff working from home. You know, it used to be if you drove through Hartford on your way to the Capitol, there were parking lots filled with, you know, employees' cars. Now it's a ghost town. So we do want to understand whether or not work from home has impacted DCF. And if it's impacted DCF, there's a chance it's impacted other agencies and their effectiveness as well. But so what's the legislature's role in that? Look, we're not the governor. We are not the administration. We cannot really get involved in internal policies within the department. However, we do have the bully pulpit. We have the ability to call commissioners of agencies in to report on what they are doing. There may be opportunities for changes in statute that will help DCF to keep kids safe. Obviously, we need to be a part of that. But at the end of the day, and I look at it this way, Melissa, look, leaders lead, right? So as leaders, as elected leaders, it is our responsibility to ensure that the agency does the things it needs to do. And if there's a role for us in helping them do that, we need to respond to that. And we need to be there for them and with them, because the staff there wants to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can help them execute that, then we have an absolute obligation to do that. And we want to be partners here. We want to be partners. But with that comes accountability. So the agency has got to be accountable as well.
Totally. I mean, and there's so many things I want to dive into, and I know we have very little time. But one of the things that I worry about is, like, I'm so glad to hear since our last conversation that you've spoken with Interim Commissioner Susan Hamilton. I'm glad to hear that she's super on board. She's not taking this lightly. I think that's great. And it seems like she's willing to work with lawmakers. My biggest concern is we need consistent leadership. And she's there on an interim basis. Now, I don't know if they're actively looking for someone to fill this role. I don't know if they want her to see through, you know, the Waterbury case, which we haven't touched on today. But, you know, there are at least two, if not there's more this year. But the ones that are getting the most coverage are the Waterbury case and this New Britain case. And so I don't know if you got any kind of sense that she's going to be sticking around or if they're actively trying to fit. Because the thing is like, that's great. I love the fact that she wants to talk to you. I love the fact that she wants to work with you guys. But like, if she's going to, you know, bail, I hate to say it that way, but it's true, you know, and understandably, she's there on an interim basis. I'm not trying to scrutinize her. But did you get a sense that she also wants to finish this work or at least do some kind of progress through the legislative session with you guys before she is replaced or she ultimately leaves? I don't know. Or does she want to stay there? Did you get any kind of sense on that?
First of all, you get a sense, but we didn't have the exact conversation. So I don't want to misspeak.
Okay.
The level of commitment to this that I heard from her indicates to me that she wants to see a lot of this through as long as she possibly can.
Okay. That makes me feel good.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
That said, though, Commissioner Hamilton, she's been at this a long time. This is not her first trip through DCF or government agencies. You know, nobody wants to work forever. Well, I guess some people do. But, you know, I get the sense that she wants to stay as until the job is done. And kudos to her for wanting to do that.
Agreed. Yeah, I was going to say, because she served as commissioner a while back. So the fact that she was even willing
Correct.
To kind of come out of retirement to do this and that she cares this much, like, I think is great. I just didn't know if it was going to be like, hey, this is great. We've got somebody on board and then we're starting all over again because she is on an interim basis. And I don't know how actively they are pursuing somebody to fill that role. I mean, I would imagine they are. But at the same time, if you've got a great leader right now, you know, maybe you don't prioritize that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, let me tell you this. She is not a placeholder. That I can tell you. She is a doer. She was put there, I believe, for a reason, to get things done and, overturn any stones to figure out what can be done within the agency. Now, I've been very critical of DCF, but I'm also very hopeful that her leadership can bring some real change. And like I said, the legislature, myself included, we need to be partners in that. And quite honestly, I think across both sides of the aisle, and we want to be partners in that.
That's great. I mean, I'm glad to hear that. And I think Senator Perillo, you know, going back to one of the conversations we were just having, the remote work, I mean, I can't speak for other agencies, but I can say, having a best friend who's a DCF worker here in Connecticut, I'm shocked that this is even an option. So, like, I understand that with the case with Mimi, I think she was living in a different state, or she was allegedly living in a different state when we found out actually she had already perished. But my question, I guess, would be if the idea is, okay, we have a which we know we have a shortage of workers, But if the problem is, well, we can't afford to have a worker drive up to Rhode Island, or we can't have a worker drive up, you know, to continue a case that started here in Connecticut, do we have a good system with the, excuse me, the other agencies, the other DCFs in other surrounding states? Like, is, I don't know if that network is one of the systems that needs to be worked on, but I just can't understand how it will ever be acceptable for any welfare check to do it remotely, to do it over Zoom. I just, especially like once is enough of an example that it should never happen again. And we actually don't know, right? I mean, we actually don't know if this has actually happened in the past. We just don't have any record of it.
Correct. And it's actually, you actually said something kind of funny. You said, you know, this idea that we can't afford to send somebody up to Rhode Island or wherever, a caseworker. Well, clearly we can't afford not to.
Correct.
Because
right.
When we do things like this, you know, DCF gets sloppy and terrible, terrible things happen. So again, you know, if we have to look very critically at work from home, and I do think we need to look at that, it's going to take partnership with the employees too, and quite honestly, the unions. But at the end of the day, I would hope that all parties involved want to keep kids safe, want to have a polished, successful, effective set of state agencies. And if that means that people are in the office more, then they're in the office more. I don't know what to say.
Well, and I mean, that's what I guess the thing that, you know, maybe Rhode Island's not a great example, but like, you know, say this person who is in this case is now halfway across the country. Like, I get it. I understand that we can't, first of all, afford maybe, and also we can't have somebody out of the field because they're flying over to Kentucky to go check on a kid. Like, I do understand that, but I guess then maybe we need to build our systems with any other agency across all 50 states, because every state, unless I'm crazy, has to have some form of a DCF or, you know, something like that. And do we have good connections with every other state? Because I think that would even give me confidence. Like, if you have somebody in person going and you've given them the caseload and it's obviously very confidential, but you're going from one DCF to another and you're able to have that in-person connection, that alone would make me feel better about how we're functioning, I don't know, as an agency.
Well, I'll tell you, I admit I don't know about partnerships like that, whether they exist or they don't. But
me neither.
What a great question.
Right?
And, you know, obviously we need to find out. You know, it's funny, some of the best ideas I get from you, Melissa.
Wow. Oh, Senator Perillo. Now, listen here, sir. I'm sure you're already on Santa's nice list. You don't have to compliment me, but that's very kind of you to say. But it's because I think, like you, Senator Perillo, this case bothers me so much. And there are things in here that seem very elementary to me. If you've got a kid who is being flagged, and their siblings, by the way, and DCF is actively trying to just keep in touch, I just can't even imagine after this, like, where DCF would ever do this again. I don't see how they could ever do a Zoom call checking on a kid ever again without this haunting them. I just can't imagine that.
Well, and you know, I remember having conversations, a very specific one, with the previous commissioner, who at the time told me that she did not intend to submit a report to the legislature about their findings. At the time, I thought that was crazy. I had the same conversation with Commissioner Hamilton, and you know, they do intend to be more transparent and work with the legislature. And that's a good thing, because you know, like that idea you just suggested about working with other agencies, you know, we need DCF to A, identify what went wrong, and B, give us their recommendations too.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, if that requires that the legislature take action, pass legislation, assist them with regulations, then we will do that. But it requires full transparency. I believe that the commissioner now understands that and wants to do that and is behind it. And then so are we.
I love that. Well, we are too here on WICC. I'm very vested in this, and I really appreciate you always having these conversations, Senator Perillo, and thank you for the updates. And if you need more questions, I'm sure I can conjure up some more for you, really, because I know this case bothers you as it does me and our listeners. So thank you for what you do, Senator Perillo, and I hope to talk to you again really soon.